In contrast to younger men I have known, my husband showers me with unexpected adorations. His is the unconstrained love of someone who has been around long enough to welcome finding the missing piece in his life. The non-competitive giving of a mature man who has reached the peak of his professional powers and is not threatened by a still aspiring wife. Marrying an older man at the midpoint of my life has meant that I must cherish the present because I cannot take the future for granted. I fervently hope that my husband's vigor, youthfulness, and spirit will enable him to beat the actuarial odds, but if not, our love is such a celebration of life that its memory can sustain me for the rest of my days.
I am in large measure responsible to you for two of the highlights of my tenure as Archbishop of New York. First, you so generously invited me here to address your congregation, and now you include me in this very special service. Georgette, knowing the enormous number of friends that your husband had, I was literally touched to tears when you asked me if I would make remarks. I have here two letters. One is addressed to me, and that I will not read, signed by Mark Tannenbaum. The other is addressed to Mrs. Georgette Bennett, and I trust she will permit me to read at least a portion of it. It's from the personal representative of Pope John Paul II. It reads, "Dear Ms. Bennett, as the Apostolic Pronuncio to the United States, representing His Holiness Pope John Paul II, I wish to join the many who mourn the loss of your dear husband, Rabbi Mark Tannenbaum, expressing my heartfelt condolences to you and to your family. Indeed, your husband will be missed by so many who have come to know his countless efforts to help people work together in love and in peace for the good of all in the family of God. In a special way, I recall his ongoing communication with the Holy See to foster Jewish-Christian dialogue, and the genuine devotion with which he pursued this endeavor. You can be assured that his memory will always endure in the hearts of men and women of goodwill who continue his work of accomplishing unity among peoples. May God remain close to you and your family now and always. May he grant to you his cherished gifts of peace and joy, and knowing that one of your own has served him so faithfully, may Rabbi Mark Tannenbaum rest in that peace which he himself sought to create among his brothers and sisters in this life. With prayerful best wishes and cordial regards, I remain sincerely yours, Augustine Cacciavillan, personal representative of Pope John Paul II. This second handwritten letter, addressed to me and signed by Mark, is precious, but I will not read it because it's too flattering. It was typical of the gentleness, the graciousness, the kindness with which he not infrequently wrote to me. I did not bring with me those letters which were filled with criticism, a significant degree of harshness. Rabbi Tannenbaum wrote to me and spoke with me on so many occasions. I knew him for many years before I came here to be the Archbishop of New York. And because he was a friend, he would speak with gentleness when he believed that gentleness was appropriate. And he would speak with critical firmness when he believed that critical firmness was appropriate. I'm not sure that I have ever had a relationship with anyone with whom I was able more amicably to disagree, or with anyone whose disagreements with me I found to be so amicable. Overall, I am very deeply grateful that he seemed to find it in his heart to say an almost infinite number of kind things to more than counterbalance that rare comment which he felt in integrity and professionally he felt that I deserved, or that my sponsors deserved. I am so happy that you are naming your son Joshua Mark. To me, Joshua, the Jewish scriptures, and I think to most scholars, was the bridge between the Pentateuch of Moses and all of the Jewish history that was to follow. The first historian after Moses, and how fitting that a son of Mark Tannenbaum would bear the name of the one who in his person exemplifies this continuity, this tradition, this Pentateuch into the future of all Jewish history. And secondly, it was Joshua who fought the battle of Jericho caused the walls to come tumbling down. And if ever a man of any religious persuasion spent a lifetime to bring it about that walls would come tumbling down, it was Rabbi Tannenbaum. Finally, it was Joshua who was commanded to do what Moses could not do, to lead the Israelites into the promised land. In my theology and in the Jewish scriptures, the promised land is where the lion and the lamb would lie down together in peace. May it please God that through the life and in God's mysterious ways, through the death of Rabbi Mark Tannenbaum, without daring to suggest which is the lion or which is the lamb, soon, please God, soon, Israel and Rome will lie down together in peace.
learned and distinguished rabbis, Your Eminence, Georgette. When I spoke with you on Saturday after having been dealt a blow to the solar plexus on the reading of the obituary page in the New York Times, we spoke, you honored me with your invitation to come here today, which I would never have missed, and you said something which is perhaps the only thing you've ever said with which I would respectfully take a degree of disagreement. You said, being pregnant and being on the verge of bearing a child in my 8th month of pregnancy, I feel a profound sense of sadness and regret because my child will never know his father. Georgette, your child will indeed know his father. He will learn much of him from the legions of great admirers whom your father attracted for so many reasons. And for the balance of my brief remarks, I'd like to speak to Joshua. I'd like him to know that his father was a man of enormous brains, dignity, courage, and an unselfish dedication to the needs of other people. He was a very, very wealthy man in the psychic capital, which he built over a career and a lifetime of concern for the plight of others. Whether it was the Jews in the Holocaust, whether it was the refugees and the boat people in Cambodia to whose border he journeyed to meet Elie Wiesel to say the Kaddish, whether it was those who were suffering in any part of the world where unjust occurrences had brought them to their knees, where human rights were in danger, Joshua, your father was there. A commanding presence, a man whose words were weapons, but not weapons of hate, but rather weapons of deep understanding between people. For reasons that can never be clearly understood, in a world in which hatred and divisiveness are all too common, he chose to devote his life, the son of a Baltimore grocer, to acquiring the vast armamentarium of tools which enabled him to intervene on behalf of humanity. What caused this to happen, Joshua? Will it happen to you? I first knew of Mark Tenenbaum when I used to shave in the morning and would turn on my radio and tune in WINS and hear his commentaries. For a quarter of a century, they enlightened the American people. And then came the lucky day, Joshua, when I was at a dinner party and sat with both of your parents, newly married, and we fell in love. And now, Joshua, I would shift my gaze for just a moment from your father to your mother. What a fabulous, fey, witty, brilliant, unique personality she is, and how she and your father blended in a way that is simply indescribable, another miracle of human relations. For together they were young lovers, recapturing the sentiment that is so rare to find in any lovers, but especially those young in spirit, irrespective of a gap in age. And to go to their home to eat the carefully selected low cholesterol but nonetheless delicious diet so lovingly foisted upon your father, who pretended to think it was the greatest cuisine in the world, and to sit and exchange anecdotes and serious thoughts with a variety of people. I think the last time I was in this home was with the police commissioner of the city of New York, where Georgette, who had known him for many, many years, wanted to bring together a group of people who were involved in trying to make the streets safer. And to Mark, this was something of enormous significance, and it was to all at the table, and it is to the city of New York. Joshua, the traditions blended together are simply indescribably beautiful. And I should only like to say to you, young man, I can't wait to meet you. I can't wait to watch you grow up. I can't wait to have you learn what a remarkably lucky young man you are.
Like many reporters, when I'm finished with an article, I throw away the notebook and all the faxes and all the messages that I used in writing the story. It's old news, on to the next article. But there has been a notebook, this notebook, that I couldn't throw away. It has been sitting on my desk for 3 years now. It is marked August 1989, and it says simply, Mark and Wolf. Inside are the notes from a joint interview I did with Rabbi Mark Tannenbaum, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and Rabbi Wolf Kelman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, on the occasion of their coincidentally timed retirements from the American Jewish Committee and the Rabbinical Assembly. Mark and Wolf had been roommates 40 years earlier as students at the Jewish Theological Seminary. And from there, each had gone on to extraordinary careers that changed worlds, the Jewish world and the Christian world, each in his own way. We met that summer day at the seminary for lunch, but found that the cafeteria, for some reason that I can't remember, was closed. So the three of us walked through the bright Morningside Heights sunshine to the cafeteria at the God Box. That's the headquarters of the National Council of Churches, just a few blocks away on Riverside Drive. With sidelong glances at each other, we hurried past the hot food and filled up our plates at the salad bar. Mark and Wolf were in wonderful moods, and they talked easily, like two college buddies, and not like two men about to retire. They were full of life and plans for the future. As for me, I was in heaven. If the seminary cafeteria had been open, no doubt we would have been interrupted every other bite with well-wishers, a student, an inquiry, a shyla, a greeting, a question, a debate, a negotiation. But for one blissful hour, I had these two great men to myself. These two great men who had become more than just my sources, but my friends and my mentors. Little did I imagine that within 3 years, I would be called upon to write both of their obituaries. Without a doubt, the hardest thing I've had to do at the New York Times is write these obituaries. Not because they were not good stories, not because Mark and Wolf didn't leave us powerful, inspiring lives to write about. No, writing these obituaries were so hard because it is so hard to say goodbye. We gather today to say goodbye to Rabbi Mark Tannenbaum, a great man, a friend, a leader for many of us, a mentor for all of us, a giant in our time. How do we do it? How do we begin to say goodbye to a life so robust, so passionate, so compelling? Well, for me, I open up the notebook. I open up the notebook and I see Mark's words. I open up the notebook and I hear his wisdom, and I feel his warmth and his friendship and his generosity. I open up the notebook and I see Mark at the end of our lunch chomping on a thick cinnamon stick, a vestige from his cigar smoking days. Give up that pipe and try one of these babies, he says to Wolf. I open up the notebook and I hear Mark reminiscing about his great mentor and friend, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. These are Mark's words. Heschel taught me that nothing, nothing was alien to Judaism. Not the life of the spirit, not Christianity, not black people, not the poor, not the hungry. All of these are part of Judaism. I open up the notebook and I hear Mark talking about his life's work, the effort to help Jews and Christians understand one another. I can't help but believe, he told me, that if Jews and Christians in Berlin and Hamburg and Dusseldorf had had a meaningful relationship, the Holocaust could never have happened. Interfaith understanding was not just a shy sideshow, an appendage to Judaism, Mark was saying. It may just be our salvation. Each of us here today carries his own notebook and her own notebook, whether written down or committed to memory, whether heard on the radio or heard in a sermon about the life, the incredible life of Rabbi Mark Tenenbaum. Georgette's notebook is brimming with 10 years of love and sharing. Sima carries the notebook of a proud and wise sister. And Michael and Susan and Adina carry the rich and intimate and sometimes heavy notebooks of children. And on every page, there is love. How do we say goodbye to Rabbi Mark Tenenbaum? I don't know, but I do know that I will keep this notebook on my desk for a long, long time. Tehei nishmato tzerura v'tzeror ha'chaim. May his soul be bound up in the bond of eternal life.
Mark honored me by being my loving and devoted friend in the truest sense of that word. He was a man of infinite wisdom, extraordinary warmth and sensitivity, limitless kindness and compassion, and resilient good humor. And he bestowed these precious gifts upon me freely and lovingly, not to aggrandize himself or to impress me with his prowess and his powers, but to enlarge and enrich my life. Despite the vast panoply of world-scale events in which he was always involved and to which he contributed so much, as we have heard today, Mark was never too busy to talk with me about the smallest details of my life, to rejoice with me when things went well, to commiserate with me when things did not go so well, to embrace me with his love and affection, and to encourage and counsel me over the many years of our friendship. Fortunately for me, I was able to give some of these treasures back. I counted among my greatest achievements that I had the foresight and good judgment, even if Georgette did not, to introduce Mark and Georgette and thereby to add so much richly deserved happiness to both of their lives. I think I also earned significant points from Mark when I sat beside him every year at the first Seder and sang the melodies while he read and interpreted the text. It's very hard for me. When I visited with him at the hospital 2 weeks ago, something happened that was ultimately, definitively my friend Mark. And I want to share it with you, if I may. We talked for a long time that evening about lots of things, including, by the way, a strategy which might enable him to deliver his high holiday sermons at the Sutton Place Synagogue. That was one of the things we discussed. And in the course of our conversation, we caught up on recent events in our lives, as we often did, and I told him that I was a bit discouraged about a personal disappointment in my life. Well, he listened quietly, lying in his hospital bed, and then in characteristic fashion, despite his own pain and the suffering he had endured and the uncertainties that lay ahead and the stitches in his chest, which I could see over the top of the gown, this beautiful and amazing man strove to comfort me and to dispel my disappointment with his words of affection and support. And then he hugged me and he kissed me and he told me that he loved me, and I told him that I loved him too. And I wanted to share these few words with you today because I did not want this precious piece of Mark, his intimate humanity that made him the best friend in the world. I didn't want this piece to get lost among his legendary triumphs and achievements on the great stages of the wider world.
If anything could be added to the tribute that was written by Ari Goldman in the New York Times on Saturday, spoke of Mark's effectiveness through the instruments of charisma and passion, and Ari and sincerity. We're all sincere people, but Mark's sincerity was his effectiveness. He meant every word he said, and you could believe everything. Mark told you of a pogrom which occurred on Erev Pesach in Russia, when all of the people of the village, Jews driven by Christians, found themselves at the edge of a deep lake. And Mark's grandfather's brother was pushed into the lake, and his head was held down until he died. It's true, because Mark told it to you. Mark could tell you of his conversations with church people and government people and popes. Personal, intimate conversations. And everything he told you was true. Mark had absolute credibility. There's a French Jew now living whose name is Pierre Sauvage. Wrote a book that became a documentary that was on television last year, called Weapons of the Spirit. It's a story of Pierre Sauvage's village, Le Chambon, where, without long plan, but on the instinct of humaneness, the entire Catholic village decided to save its Jewish population to 1943. Sauvage writes of these weapons of the spirit and of his revisiting of that village, Le Chambon, with his cousin Elizabeth, whom he introduces to Madame Broad, who saved his life and his family's. And the two women embraced. And he asked his cousin Elizabeth, "Why did you cry?" He says, "Because I had this feeling." "What did you feel?" "I felt I was holding the tree. There was softness to the touch, but it was strong and stout and straight and stately, and it had roots, and I need those roots." Adina, Michael, Susan, last time I saw your father was in the hospital, Lenox Hill Hospital. I came in, he sat up, and I embraced him, and he hugged me. I didn't cry, I knew somehow to save it. What did I feel? I felt I was holding a tree. There was softness to the touch. It was a tree. It was strong, stout, straight, and stately. And it had roots. And I needed those roots. It's been a very long weekend, Georgette, since Friday morning. I spent all of Shabbat holding that tree. I hugged it. I realized that the tree didn't stand by itself. There was a forest. There were other trees. That tree is in the company of others, rabbis, teachers, leaders, statesmen, churchmen, organizations, American, Jewish, national, international. And this tree was the giant. This tree I was holding surpassed all. It towered over all, and it was still growing. And all the trees of the forest were looking up and reaching higher to this tallest tree. I was holding it. I was straightened, I was strengthened. You know what an honor it is to be a really good personal friend of Mark Tannenbaum? Georgette, a really good personal friend. Of personal life and of work, Mark and I shared all but one thing, I think. And that was the one thing I learned on Friday morning. Mark had requested of his wife a while ago, as I had requested of mine a while ago, that we would do each for the other what I am doing today. And neither of us knew it. My beloved friend, Yudidi Mordechai Ki Damtani, you have arrived before me. There is a prayer brought to us by Rabbi Emeritus of this synagogue, Rabbi Judah Nadich.
Rabbi Judah Nadich indeed has been rabbi of this synagogue for over 30 years, retired some 5 years ago. I know that he was more than a dear friend of Rabbi Mark Tannenbaum. We are asking him if he will give a short tribute and a word of prayer at this time.
Another grocer's son from Baltimore rises now not to add any more encomiums, but to read a closing prayer. I grieve for my friend of many years, who was associated with me in the conduct of the High Holy Day services of this congregation for 4 years, starting 35 years ago. Nucho Eden. Our God and God of our fathers and our mothers, our rock and our redeemer, 1,000 years in your sight are as a passing day, an hour of night. Our generations come and go while you endure forever. We are always in your hand, O Lord, in death as in life, trusting in your love and your judgments. O merciful Father, strengthen those who mourn the loss of Mark Tannenbaum. Help them to look beyond this moment. Help them to realize that death cannot destroy the bonds of your everlasting love. Sustain them with the knowledge of our faith that you will not abandon our souls to the grave, that you will not allow your faithful to suffer oblivion. For you, O Lord, have taught us the way of life. Through you, our refuge, we gain eternity. And let us say together, Amen.
Please rise as the Cantabigalizan recites the memorial.
Oh, it's Thank you.